I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast, presented by Allied Home Security.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Tuesday to all of you. Happy Texans Ticket Tuesday to all of you. We're giving away tickets at 45 past each hour. Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne with you. Appreciate you getting up with us. All right, Seth, I'm going to get right to it. So yesterday, kind of a stressful day, just sports-wise, because you're sitting there and I'm watching the news wire to see if there's any more Justin Reed news, which we were kind of teased a little bit by David Culley in his press conference. Like, oh, we'll meet this afternoon. So he keeps kicking the can down the road with that. So I'm watching that news wire. And I'm watching the baseball hot stove. I'm watching Corey Seager get paid 10 years, $325 million. And everybody's saying, there's the bar for Carlos. So now we got this lockout coming tomorrow in baseball. And now what's going to happen with Carlos? Could that come down in the next 24 hours? I need to take a walk. So my wife and I go take a walk and look at the Christmas lights in River Oaks. I fill up a big tumbler of hot chocolate and peppermint schnapps. And then we got the music playing. And we're just peacefully walking down River Oaks Boulevard onto Del Monte there. And we're just kind of taking the spin, looking at all the beautiful, beautiful lights. And then I get several push notifications that LSU has stolen my football coach.
It just swiped not good them right for out me. From underneath you.
Oh, my this God. Is,
Sean, especially it's not good for you because you've got so many freezing cold takes about how stupid it is that Brian Kelly would ever leave. Yeah. It's absurd.
Yeah.
This is karma
for
you looking down on all those poor Cougs
who
thought that Tom Herman was never going to leave.
Yep.
And you sat there and you gloated after Tom Herman left and said, I told you, you guys were so confident Tom Herman would never leave. That's exactly how you've been the last month or so. You've been telling people, you are so stupid. Why would Brian Kelly ever leave Notre Dame? Nobody leaves Notre Dame.
Now you're making stuff up, but I was kind of like that. My tone was like that. I never called anybody stupid.
You were dismissive.
I was very really, dismissive, yes.
Like, you weren't concerned one bit that Brian Kelly, who has really threw a whole lot of elbow grease, and it's taken time, and there have been steps, you know, one step forward, two steps back at times. He's built himself a resurgent Notre Dame program.
They've made the 14 playoff two out of the last 3 years, and it might be three of the last four if a few of the right teams win this weekend. And for those who haven't heard, you're just waking up to it. Brian Kelly is leaving Notre Dame, first coach in the history of the program to leave for another job. He's leaving Notre Dame for LSU. The reports I saw, Seth, I don't know if you saw anything different, 10 years, over $100 million for Brian Kelly at LSU is what
it's,
I saw.
It's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money.
It's almost baseball money. It's like 31-year-old shortstop money, Sean.
It is.
Well, second baseman, I guess, money.
So. Yeah. But, the conversion chart, that is what it is. It's top-of-the-market money. LSU spending spending big bucks for Brian Kelly. So I started thinking this through. And I'll say this. I'm not happy for Brian Kelly. I'm not distraught that he's leaving. I'm a little distraught that he's leaving just because he's done a good job. I do think the program's in fine shape right now, and whoever's taking over a program in much better condition than the one Brian Kelly took over a decade ago. So I'll say that. I think they're going to get a good coach. I'm not super worried about that. I think the more interesting part of this, especially to our audience, because we probably have more LSU fans than we do Notre Dame fans in the audience, is the LSU side of this thing.
Yeah, and this is you should be excited if you're an LSU fan.
I think so. I mean, look. This is how I think Brian Kelly looks at it, Seth, and you tell me if you think I'm off base on this, but I don't know if Brian Kelly just checks all the boxes of being a great fit at LSU, but I think he checks enough boxes, and the main one being he's a really good recruiter and a really good coach, and I think if you're Brian Kelly and you're looking at it, you go, why would you leave Notre Dame? They might build a statue of you there if you make another playoff run, or especially if you win a championship. I think Brian Kelly looks at it, I think three things. The money, I think he looks at it and says, I can recruit now with no academic restrictions. I can go get whoever I want. I don't have to worry about study hall. I don't have to worry about making sure that they're taking the proper course load, all that stuff. And I think the third thing is...
You sure about that, Sean? We sure that the average LSU football player isn't... okay, gotcha.
I'm sure that the academic restrictions at LSU are beneath those of Notre Dame.
Absolutely positive. Okay.
I'm 100% sure that the academic restrictions at LSU are less encumbering than the ones at Notre Dame. 100% certain. The third thing is, and this is the big one, I think Brian Kelly looks at LSU and says, oh my God, Les Miles and Ed Orgeron won national championships there. I think I can win four. That's how I think he looks at it.
Yeah, and I think one of the biggest objections that I've seen are people saying, well, is he a culture fit, this, that, the other, because he doesn't seem like he's going to vibe with the locals the way either of those two previous guys you mentioned would. I would just say, okay, was Nick Saban a perfect culture fit?
No.
West Virginia, look, I guess Saban gets away with almost seeming kind of Southern because he's from West Virginia, maybe, and that's if you know his history. There's nothing about him that seems like a Southern guy. That guy, yeah. Nick Saban is more Wall Street than he is, you know, and like nice down home genteel.
Yeah, not
Southern
Cajun,
guy.
Not Cajun South at least.
No, definitely not. Yeah. So I wouldn't worry about that at all. I think he's got an edge to him. Look, lots of Northerners have come down to the South and convinced people to, you know, do it their way. General Sherman, for instance. I think Brian Kelly will perhaps be just like that. He'll storm through Louisiana, picking up recruits left and right along his path to the bayou.
Now can I tell you what I'm terrified of?
Yeah.
This is what I'm terrified of. Like, I'm not terrified that Brian Kelly is leaving because I think the Notre Dame job is still a really, really good job. I don't know if they're going to pay $10 million a year to whoever's coaching there. They could if they wanted to. This is what I'm terrified of. I am terrified that Tim Kelly is going to be calling plays for Notre Dame as Bill O'Brien's offensive coordinator next year.
I am terrified.
Yeah. I am terrified that Bill O'Brien is going to become the next head coach at the University of Notre Dame.
Stop being terrified of that. I honestly... I started off as thinking I'm going to kind of torment Sean about this because Bill O'Brien does make a lot of sense. If you look at his resume, you know, Georgia Tech, Duke, these are places where nerdy kids play football, just like at Notre Dame. I think Bill O'Brien is either going to end up as the head coach at Notre Dame or Cornell next year. I think we can resign ourselves to that fate. One of our alma maters will have Bill O'Brien as a football coach. But I think that one thing people wouldn't realize about O'Brien is that, especially in a college setting, he has a very warm, engaging side to him. He's a very complex human being. He's got a side to him that's, you know, take no prisoners, angry Bill, screaming Bill, all of that. But he is also a really engaging, interesting, charismatic person when you sit down and have a conversation with him.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons at Penn State he was able to convince so many upperclassmen who, remember, this was before the transfer portal and everything. Those kids were granted the ability to leave and go anywhere they wanted because of the sanctions against the state. O'Brien convinced all those guys to stay, partly through just the force of his personality and his recruiting ability. And I also do think, too, that the X's and O's side in college football is just not nearly as in-depth as it is in the NFL. And it becomes a whole lot more about just getting kids to execute,
yeah,
just holding kids to certain standards and getting them to run a tight ship. And I think the Penn State offense looked like that when Bill O'Brien was there. They weren't a force or anything yet, but you could see the discipline in the program. Sean, I think I honestly 100%, I'm not just trying to make you feel better, I think that Bill O'Brien would actually be a really good fit in Notre Dame.
Yeah, I do too. Look, part of this is Texans PTSD for me. Like if I were covering any other NFL team, and I was a Notre Dame grad, and Bill O'Brien was a candidate for the job, and I wasn't so close to what went on here, especially at the end, once he had total control. And in college, you have total control of everything as a head coach. And I know it's different being total control with a salary cap and things like that than it is recruiting off of Rivals.com, 5-star and 4-star, et cetera, et cetera. He is a great salesman. There's no doubt about it. There is a charm about Bill O'Brien, I would guess, when he sits down in front of high school kids. He's got a great version of his story in the NFL that he could tell with Deshaun Watson and with winning a bunch of divisions for the Texans and things like that. And you're right. College is definitely a few notches below schematically. So, yeah, I think I think he probably checks a lot of boxes, not the least of which at Notre Dame is he's Irish, he's Catholic, he's from Boston, all those things. So he's right out of Central Casting. A lot of people don't know this. He was the offensive coordinator at Notre Dame for 5 days back in 2001 when they hired George O'Leary.
Back when George O'Leary was the guy, he flew up. You told the story. He flew up there in a private jet, and 5 days later, they all took off on Southwest flights.
C Group on Southwest on the way back. He told me that story himself.
What's the rule on that? You don't have to actually put that on your resume, right? Usually, if it's less than a couple months, they say, okay, don't worry, you get a gimme on that one.
Well, he jumped right back. Whoever was hired at Georgia Tech kept him on board as the OC. So my guess is he didn't put on his resume offensive coordinator at Notre Dame. So January 4th through January 9th, 2002.
Do you really have PTSD about Bill O'Brien, or the other side of it would be, look, you liked Brian Kelly. Brian Kelly and Bill O'Brien seem like the same guy in a lot of respects. Just a hard-o'd, you know, guy with a temper from Massachusetts.
That's exactly
who those guys are.
Kelly had to evolve. Look, Kelly, Kelly early on was more like O'Brien was at the end here, where yelling at people and things like that. Like, Brian Kelly, that 4-8 season they had in 2016 was a real wake-up call for Brian Kelly. So Kelly had to evolve. Bill O'Brien will have to evolve as well if he gets that job. Do I think he gets the job? I doubt it, just because there's going to be a lot of candidates for it. But your sales pitch helped, Seth. I guess I'll say that. It helped. Your tweets are not helping, though, Seth, where you're encouraging people to come at me and tell me why Bill O'Brien would be a great candidate. Is this you?
Yeah, did anybody respond
to that? Torment Sean Pendergast Day?
Yeah, it's Torment Sean Pendergast Day on Sports Radio 610. I did put in there that I thought that he would actually be a good fit there. Somebody said, yeah, just keep on rotating those old guys. O'Brien's not that old.
He's not.
It's not like you're recycling O'Brien back into the NFL right away or anything. Yeah. I think I think the issue with diversity in coaching right now isn't about age, because lots of young guys are getting their chance. It's more about, I would say, ethnic or racial background.
Yeah.
There's not diversity on the racial front, but age I'm not worried about.
All right, so Payne and Pendergast, we're off and running. I hope every time Sean gets snooty about Notre Dame's academic prestige, his daughter texts into the show. That's kind of funny right there.
Wait, who texted in?
Someone texted, I don't know. Somebody texted in and said, I hope every time Sean gets snooty about Notre Dame's academic prestige, his daughter texts into the show.
Oh, your daughter.
My daughter.
Okay,
yeah,
I got you. Yeah.
Yeah, my daughter.
Because she goes to Harvard.
She goes to Harvard, yeah.
You know what your daughter is? Your daughter is cocky like Lane Kiffin. Because she just doesn't care. She transferred out of Harvard just for the hell of it. And then a year later said, hey, fools, I'm coming back.
She is. She's Lane Kiffin. Struts in doing the Vince McMahon walk.
Right. She's like, I don't need Harvard. See ya. And
I'm going to a track factory for a year.
I'm going to go hang out on the West Coast for a while. And then she just came back.
She's a free spirit, no doubt. All right, it's Texans Ticket Tuesday. Be listening about 30 minutes and change from now, and you'll get your first chance to win Texans Colts tickets for this Sunday. 45 past every hour up till 6 p.m. today. Speaking of the Texans, so what is going on with Justin Reed? Is he going to be in the lineup next Sunday? David Culley was asked. You will hear next.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne with you on a Tuesday. All right, so what's the latest with Justin Reed? David Culley was asked yesterday about that. Have you determined more about Justin Reed, who, by the way, for those just getting caught up, he was benched on Sunday. He was on the inactive list because of a dust-up behind the scenes with Coach Culley, reportedly. And we found out who the player was, Seth, according to Aaron Wilson. Chris Conley, according to Aaron Wilson, was the teammate that Justin Reed got into an argument
those
with.
Those might be the two of the smartest guys on the team right there.
A lot of Justin big words Reed. Were exchanged, I'm sure.
Conley's an incredible. Remember, I remember sitting down with Conley, and I'm like, I should have prepped for this interview better. This dude's smart.
If I can speak extemporaneously, saying to Coach Culley.
No, remember we talked because his father is a public health.
Very
his
smart.
His father
dude.
Was a naval public health guy, mm-hmm. So we were talking about the pandemic and everything.
Very
so
smart.
So between
dude.
Justin Reed, Chris Conley. And David Culley.
Yeah.
I want to see Culley moderating that debate between those two guys. Because those two guys might be two of the smartest guys in the building.
Right. I think Culley would listen to both of them, and he'd look around, he'd look back and forth and go, I think you both make great points.
Yeah, that's right.
Boy, you both sound really, really smart. All right, let's get
to it. Now this is notable, I think, that supposedly there was some kind of a correction that he made for Justin Reed. I'll have you play the audio.
Yeah, let's hear from Coach Culley. Coach Culley was asked about this yesterday morning. Have you determined more about what's going to happen with Justin Reed moving forward?
Have you determined more about Reed's return?
We'll talk about it a little bit more today, John.
You know. What are you looking for when you have your discussion with him?
Well, just to make sure he understands that we're all in everything that we're doing, you know, and I'm not saying that he wasn't all in, but, you know, we have rules and we have standards here. And I just felt like that last week during that particular situation, he didn't meet those standards. And when that happens, then I made a decision.
What is sort of your standard for when coaches and players disagree in a meeting or at practice?
It wasn't just in a disagreement. It had something to do with our rules and our standards. It wasn't just in a disagreement.
Okay, so not just a disagreement. So who knows what that means? Seth, so David Culley, that was yesterday morning at 10:30. So he's kind of kicking the can down the road to whatever meeting was taking place yesterday afternoon. I put up a poll yesterday, an emergency Pender poll. David Culley just said they would meet this afternoon to see if Justin Reed would face further discipline. Do we think something newsworthy comes out this afternoon? And if so, what is it? The choices I gave people were Reed gets cut, Reed gets suspended, Reed apologizes, or nothing newsworthy happens, which was the runaway winner. 59% of the people voting said that nothing newsworthy happens. As of right now, those people are right. We didn't hear anything out of the Texans yesterday, further than what we heard from David Culley.
The only notable thing I think that would really happen is if there's a further benching of some sort, or maybe, you know, if he got benching, and then they might actually suspend him where he'd get conduct detrimental and a fine or lose his salary, whatever, for a week. You know, if this is framed as Justin Reed was being corrected in a meeting and didn't agree with the correction, and maybe Chris Conley stood up and said, hey, you got to take responsibility. I'm completely speaking in hypotheticals there. I can see and understand why the team would be upset with that, and why David Culley might feel like, okay, hey, this is, you know, like at a certain point, you got to take responsibility. Justin Reed had at least one big mental error in that game where he was underneath and he jumped something underneath and in that Titans game. So if Justin Reed is at the point where he all of a sudden thinks he's above the coaching, then I'd say, yeah, whatever, bench him. Like, go ahead. Now, if it was something more trivial than that, then it seems pretty extreme. We just don't know.
Yeah.
And it depends on how, you know, how belligerent was Justin Reed in saying that he was right or wrong, or the coaches were right or wrong. Because sometimes the coaches are wrong. There's nothing more frustrating than when you're sitting there and maybe your coach coached you to do it one way, and the defensive coordinator or the head coach thought it was going to be a different way, and then you're getting there getting berated in a meeting while the coaches are wrong, that's frustrating. I just hope that's not the case, because then it's a sign of weakness by David Culley. That, oh, okay, I couldn't just be wrong, then I'm gonna go ahead and bench you. Likewise, maybe it really was Justin Reed who was at fault and to blame, and then in that case, it's a bad look for Justin Reed.
From your experience, 10 years, how frequent is it that players actually do point something out to the coach that they disagree with, whether it's constructive and amicable or whether it's maybe a little more belligerent? How does that happen frequently, or most of the time is it coaches say this is the way to do it, and even though you know that we probably should be doing something different, this is what we're being asked to do, so we go do it?
Yeah, not that frequent. I mean, you might have – guys will have questions sometimes. I mean, there's a lot of times where it's tough. Like when Richard Smith was a defensive coordinator for the Texans, I know the defensive backs especially sometimes were just completely confused about what they were supposed to do. The communication was really bad. I don't think Richard Smith himself knew what exactly was going on. Things changed frequently. So I remember talking to defensive backs who were just basically like, I don't know what the hell I'm supposed to do. But even then, Richard Smith was a guy that was very loud and bellicose, maybe because of some insecurity on his part, who would just shout people down and yell at them. So guys just didn't say anything. You just sit there and say, all right, I'm going to get torched. So it depends on who the coach is, I suppose. Guys, by the time they reach the NFL, there's a selection process, you know. Guys know how to take criticism. There aren't that many guys that are super sensitive about it. And there are some times where you're going to get ripped in a meeting and it's not quite right, and maybe you say a little something about it, but you take care of it afterwards. You just kind of sit through it and let it go. It's like on Sean, if you ever watch reality show, I used to watch American Idol. And then I used to also watch was it Dancing with the Stars? It was one of those ones where there was like people trying to make it as dancers. But most of them had training as dancers. Like these were actually good dancers. And it's funny because on American Idol, so many of those people that show up for those auditions are just people whose like mama told them that they sing good in the shower.
Oh yeah, they're karaoke stars at their local sports bar. Yeah.
And when they get criticized by Simon or anybody else, it just destroys their world.
Yeah.
They just don't know. When you go to some of those other reality shows where there are people who are trained dancers, or even on American Idol, the ones that have had training in singing, they take the criticism, they say thank you, and they move on, even if they disagree with the criticism.
Mm-hmm.
Usually it's like that in the NFL. Everybody there is at that point has been coached hard at some point, and they know how to take criticism. With Justin Reed, we've never had any hint or shred of evidence before that he doesn't take criticism well from coaches.
Right.
He's never been looked at as a bad locker room guy or anything. So I tend to, my gut reaction, my first reaction is to side with Justin Reed.
Yeah.
Without having any information at all, sometimes good dudes are subject to weird, bad, errant coaching.
Yep.
If they object, all of a sudden they can get painted as the bad guy. I just haven't seen any reason to believe Justin Reed's a bad guy.
He's been here a lot longer than anybody else that was involved in this reported incident behind the scenes, that's for sure. So we've got a longer history with him. And Seth, I said it yesterday, I think the combination, I think this is maybe what this is, the combination of losing, the combination of having a head coach who really doesn't impact positively your chances of winning every Sunday. In fact, there's been a few games this year where David Culley's decisions have led directly to the Texans losing games. And I think the disparity between the performance of the offense and the defense on this team. I mean, this is an historically bad offense in many, many ways. This is a defense that's played statistically pretty good, especially considering the position the offense has put it in. In so many of these games, I think it's a really, really toxic combination. This might not be the last time we see something or hear about something like this behind the scenes with this team.
Yeah, it's I'm just having a hard time seeing how players might show respect for David Culley other than out of the obligation to show respect to an authority figure versus, actually feeling like this guy really knows what he's doing.
Yep.
I mean, I watched press conference yesterday. According to David Culley, everything's fine with the offense.
Yeah.
Running backs are doing great.
Yeah.
Everything's cool. You know, they just need to execute a little bit better. Running backs are doing great. Well, what's wrong with the offense? Well, sometimes the running backs are doing the wrong thing.
It's crazy.
Okay, whatever.
We'll hit that at the top of the hour. It was another bananas press conference yesterday. It was wild. Odyssey NFL insider Ross Tucker joins us at 7:30. We'll talk some NFL, maybe even ask Ross about some of these college openings as well. He covers college football too. Insider calls presented by BetQL. BetQL here to help us all make better bets. The real proven analytics, bet smarter, beat the books. Download the BetQL app or visit BetQL.com today. Lots of baseball free agency activity, not only from over the weekend, but yesterday afternoon. Is the news good or bad on Carlos Correa's odds of staying a Houston Astro? That's next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, yesterday, at least according to people who tweet about this stuff, was a good day for Carlos Correa, in so much as Corey Seager, who is widely viewed as the one free agent who's on the level of Carlos Correa in this offseason, he signed with the Rangers yesterday. Shortstop Corey Seager leaving the Dodgers to go to the Rangers. 10 years, $325 million. So, Seth, Corey Seager gets the contract that seems to be kind of most often reported or mocked as this is what Carlos Correa is looking for. Like Lindor neighborhood money. The key number there, I think, more than the 325 being the 10, being the 10 years. Corey Seager, same age as Carlos Correa, 10 years, $325 million from the Rangers, who just one day before signed Marcus Semien, who's now presumably going to play second base for them with Seager at shortstop, to 7 years, $175 million. Seth, a week ago, you and I were looking at the shortstop market, kind of conceding that Correa was going to leave, saying, you know what? I would take the 31-year-old Semien on a 3 or 4 year deal. He got 7 from the Rangers.
Yeah. That's what. So apparently, I don't. Maybe the Astros did offer Marcus Semien something like that. There are a couple of interesting things here that this dual signing by the Rangers means for both Carlos Correa and the Astros. One, from Carlos Correa's perspective, he's got to feel pretty good that the Rangers just took out two competing shortstops in the free agency market with one fell swoop.
A great, great thought. Yes.
Yeah, you know, like he's so Correa's sitting there thinking, I don't know, maybe the Yankees, maybe Detroit, they had an interest perhaps in Marcus Semien or Corey Seager. Then those are two options for them now that aren't on the table. I guess the other question is just, and this goes with the Astros. Were the Rangers interested in Correa and Correa's price was too high, or was Corey Seager their first choice at shortstop?
Right.
He's not nearly as good defensively, but more durable. You can make some other arguments for Seager over Correa. But I'm that's what I haven't seen, is whether the Rangers even pursued Carlos Correa.
Well, I think the fair question is, did the Rangers offer Carlos Correa the same deal they offered Corey Seager? The exact same deal? If the deal were 10 years, $325 million, and you're the Rangers, who would you rather have, Carlos Correa or Corey Seager?
Seager doesn't have an option on this, and I wonder if the Rangers offered the same deal to Carlos Correa, Correa might be holding out for some more control in the matter that he gets like an option after 5, 6, 7 years, whatever it might be. Yeah. But for the Rangers and Seager, this is nope, you're ours for the next 10 years. We'll do with you what we want.
That's right. Yeah, he is locked into the Rangers. There's worse plights to have in life than being locked in 10 years, $325 million. So Seager goes to the Rangers.
Yeah, it is in Dallas.
Simeon goes to the Rangers.
John, they don't have cures for all those venereal diseases they have.
I didn't say it was
all
the best.
Strains.
I said okay. It could be worse. Okay. There is no state income tax up there as well, so it could be worse. So
I think Oklahoma?
So who is left then, Seth? Let's play this little process of elimination. What if you're Carlos Correa? The Rangers are now off the board, clearly off the board. They've signed not one but two guys that could potentially play shortstop. Simeon will probably play second base, although Seager, down the road, I could see 5 years into this 10-year deal with Seager, he's playing third base for them. Who knows?
I wonder, though, with Seager, that was one of the things reportedly that was a chip on his shoulder. His whole time as a young player was when he was drafted, a lot of scouts predicted that he's a big guy, he'll end up playing third at some point. So, and obviously Simeon's older than him, he's going to be done early, but he is on a 7-year deal.
Yeah.
I wonder if Seager, that might be some drama, hopefully, that does the Rangers in at some point.
So these are the teams, I'm scratching together this list here by hand, yeah. Seth. The teams that have been mentioned for Correa, like that I've seen on odds boards, let's say, for Correa that are still out there. Detroit has always been the favorite, the betting favorite at least, because of A.J. Hinch, and they're supposedly spending money. I guess the news with Detroit over the weekend that has a ripple effect with Correa is that they are talking to Javi Baez, who is one of the other shortstops. The other shortstops that are still on the market that are in that upper tier to tippy-top tier, Correa is still clearly the best still out there. Trevor Story and Javi Baez are two other shortstops that are still out there that presumably are going to go to one of these shortstop needy teams. I think they're both viewed as more cost-effective solutions than Carlos Correa. They're just not as good at baseball as him. So Detroit is talking to Javi Baez. Here's the list I have, Seth. The Yankees, are we feeling the Yankees still as a threat? Even though they're saying they're not in the shortstop market, they could come out of nowhere, could they not?
You know, the fact that Buster Olney said that the Yankees weren't pursuing Carlos Correa carries some weight with me, just because Olney is not a guy that strikes me at all as who's just out there reporting everything he hears because he wants as many clicks.
He's not
as
a baseball lockhand for him.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Like I know there are a lot of Astros fans that don't like Olney because they're convinced that Olney hates the Astros, and he's written some kind of snarky things about the like he still goes back to the sign stealing scandal when talking about these current Astros a lot. I don't like that, but when it comes to actually breaking news, I believe that he was told that by somebody credible that they weren't pursuing Correa, but I do think that can change.
Yes.
I think maybe the Yankees, after having signed Gerrit Cole last year, might be trying to exercise some kind of fiscal responsibility and maybe letting the high-end guys go first and try to find the right bargain or the right deal. In a year where there are multiple shortstops available, or at least were.
Well, and they've got Aaron Judge's extension looming here in the near future, which is going to be a gigantic, gigantic contract. All right, so Detroit, Yankees, these are the other teams that I have written down here. The Seattle Mariners. Are we concerned about the Seattle Mariners opening up the checkbook for Carlos Correa?
I wouldn't be concerned right now.
Like the question is, do we think these teams will go 10 years on this guy?
Right. I don't think Seattle would.
Yeah, I don't either.
The other teams, the Blue Jays were 6-1 a week ago.
Yeah, I don't see the Blue Jays being the Blue Jays have spent some money this offseason as well so far, and they spent money on Springer last year, and they've already got Bo Bichette playing shortstop for them. So I don't think they're in the shortstop market.
The Mets have signed 17 of the top 15 free agents already.
Yeah, they've got Francisco Lindor already at 10 years, 340.
Honestly, I'm reading this article in the Chronicle, and I don't understand these odds that they're giving for Correa. Because they put the Mets as one of the odds here. I've got four other teams.
Forget about what they're typing there. I've got four other teams that have been mentioned for Correa. Minnesota, the Dodgers, who now have a need. Well, they have a needed shortstop, but they can always slide Trey Turner back over there. St. Louis.
I've seen the Dodgers suggest that the Dodgers might be pursuing Freddie Freeman just to replace some of the offense.
Okay.
but not obviously not to put him at shortstop.
Right. St. Louis, Philadelphia, and then obviously the Astros are still there. I guess the bottom line is this, Seth, because these are all we can dig into all these teams here. But I think the bottom line is this: after seeing the way the market has played out, where Seager got the contract that Correa is presumably looking for, but some of the seats on this game of shortstop musical chairs could be taken up pretty soon by the Trevor Stories and the Javi Baezes of the world. Do you feel better or worse now than you did a week ago that Carlos Correa might still be a Houston Astro next year?
I feel better as long as more time keeps elapsing. And the more radio silence there is, too, I guess, without any leaks of what an actual offer is or a potential offer, then I'm more intrigued by this. Now, the biggest question is just, okay, how entrenched is he on the 10 years? And is there a 10-year offer on the table for Carlos Correa already, but just the average annual value that he wants? Is he going to – would he accept – because this is where it also might get interesting. The Astros made their 6-year offer. Would they be open to giving him some kind of an option after 3 years? Would they be open to somehow making it for Correa, who could save some face if maybe the 10-year deal isn't out there? Maybe teams are just nervous about his injury history, and they want to give him a really good and healthy deal, but it's only going to be for 7 or 8 years. Better than the Astros, but still not a 10-year deal. Would Carlos then say, oh, I got a good thing going in Houston, and maybe that 6-year deal isn't as much of an insult if after 2 or 3 years I get a chance to test the market?
The current offer, just to make it clear, the current offer is actually 5 for $160 from the Astros.
Yeah.
So it's 5 years, $160. And I'm with you. I've always thought that if he comes back to the Astros and the Astros sort of meet in the middle on the overall years of the deal, not 10 years, but not 5, somewhere in the middle, that there, I think you're right on target, that there would be some sort of opt-out to let him test free agency again at, say, age 30 and see what the market looks like.
I wonder if he – maybe he'll learn a lesson, too, from having watched Dallas Keuchel, who, remember, didn't have the offer he wanted in free agency and ended up sitting there till – when was it, August by the time Dallas Keuchel –
June.
Yep. Oh, it was June. There's a big difference between June and August. But it was June
before
he signed and didn't get what he wanted, obviously. At some point, I don't think it's going to be quite that drastic with Carlos Correa. He's going to get some really respectable offers. But if it's not the offer he wants, there has to be some kind of face saving involved. And with him, I think it might be easier for him to say, oh, okay, yeah, I'm sticking around with Houston. But what they gave me was $32 million a year and with an option to become a free agent after 2 or 3 years. Nobody else was willing to go that far.
Yep.
Then the Astros, it doesn't look like he's settling. It looks like the Astros actually gave him something that nobody else was willing to give him.
And I think my guess is that's probably a deal that the Astros would be a little more amenable to, you know, not knowing what the future looks like. And Seth, I think there's two things at play with Correa here. I think there's the long-term thing that you just touched on, which is, what are the offers that are out there? Is he getting that 10-year offer? Is he getting anything? Is he getting any smoke that's even close to that right now? We don't know. The reports, there have been some pretty well-sourced reports on almost everybody but Correa as far as what the chatter is right now. We've got reports of Javi Baez talking to teams. Some of these other guys have actually signed with teams. There are Trevor Story reports out there. The closest thing we have with Correa is he had lunch with A.J. Hinch. That's all we have so far. That's
the tiny Boxwoods.
A tiny Boxwoods, which made you chuckle many, many times. That's the long-term one. The short-term one is there's going to be a lockout tomorrow. At midnight tomorrow, there's going to be a lockout. So where does Carlos Correa stand on feeling the need to take a bird in the hand before we know what the financial landscape looks like in baseball? Or is he somebody who looks at it and says, I'm Carlos Correa, regardless of what it looks like, teams are going to prioritize me, whether the CBT, whether the luxury tax has gone down or up, or there's a spending minimum or there's no spending minimum. I'm Carlos Correa, damn it. There's going to be 10 years waiting for me out there, pre-lockout or post-lockout. I think that's the other thing that we don't know, is how is Correa's camp viewing the work stoppage that seems to be a lock to happen tomorrow at midnight?
Somebody has said that these 10-year deals never work out for teams. That's an exaggeration. I think they do. I think the thing that you have to wonder is, do most teams go in knowing full well that years 8, 9, and 10 might be busts on this contract?
Right.
I think they do. And I think a lot of it is a little bit of they do the calculations. In baseball, they're much smarter than they are in other sports about saying how much, and I guess maybe by necessity, because you don't have sellout baseball games every day of the week. Yep. Unless you're, you know, one of the real marquee teams. They do the calculations like, okay, how many butts does this guy put in the seats on average? And over the course of 81 home games every single year for those first 6 or 7 years of the contract, is it worth what we get on the back end? It used to make more sense before there was the competitive balance tax. Now you got to start worrying about, okay, 7, 8, 9, 10 years from now, it makes it harder to operate. It's not just the cash we're spending. But I mean, like A-Rod's 10-year deal, did that make sense? It was 10 years, $252 million back in 2001.
Well, ultimately for the Rangers, it didn't, but for the Yankees, it did.
It ended up being a contract that made sense, right? Yeah. Like he paid that. Joey Votto, 10 years, $225 million back in 2022. So for the most part, what's that?
You said back in 2022. Did you mean like...
Back in 2012,
okay,
sorry.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's okay.
I'd say for the most part, for most of that contract, yeah. Joey Votto is worth it, right?
Yeah, yeah. I think most of the teams, Seth, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think most of the teams that sign guys to 10-year deals, do it knowing that the last 2 or 3 years are like credit card payments. You know, it's just, We got to make these payments.
Pujols was the one.
That was brutal.
Pujols didn't make sense as a 3-year deal.
No.
Like Pujols was bad almost immediately.
That was brutal.
Can you imagine signing something for 10 years and then he immediately turns into a lemon?
It's a lemon.
Incredible.
Yeah, crazy. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Texans Ticket Tuesday. So be listening in the next couple minutes here. We're going to be giving away tickets to the Texans and the Colts. We're talking about Carlos Correa and his chances of coming back to the Astros. I guess the other big deal, Seth, that we should touch on here, Max Scherzer is off the board. A lot of pitching went off the board the last 24 hours. Scherzer to the Mets, 3 years, $130 million. So Scherzer is getting $43 million a year from the Mets on a 3-year deal. Robbie Ray, Cy Young winner in the AL, goes to the Mariners, so the Astros will see him a handful of times this year. 5 years, $115 million. Kevin Gausman from the Giants goes to the Blue Jays. 5 years, $110 million. So Scherzer's the big one off the board. $43 million for Scherzer. I'm feeling good about Verlander at 25 right now.
Do you read anything into all this, by the way, the fact that all of a sudden there's a flurry of activity in some pretty damn reasonably exorbitant contracts compared to a couple years ago when everybody was pissed because nobody was getting paid and nobody knew what the hell was going on? It makes me feel optimistic that there's going to be labor peace at some point.
Yes.
Like, I don't think teams would be spending this liberally if they felt like we were on the verge of an extended lockout.
Right.
I'm sure there will be some kind of a lockout for a little spell, but the two sides must be a lot closer than maybe sometimes it's reported.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, I might need to dig a little deeper into exactly which teams are doing the spending and where they're at and what their ownership is like. But yeah, you're right. The fact that the Mariners are spending $115 million on a starting pitcher, you're right. And the Blue Jays are piling more money. Brimer Buxton just did an extension with the Twins for $100 million. I think you may be onto something there. I think that might be accurate. Starling Marte, Seth, all these contracts, you're right. You and I were like, hey, Starling Marte for 3 years, you know, 3 years, $15 million a year, you know, 3 years, 45. I'd do that if I were the Astros. Nope, in come the Mets, 4 years, $78 million. Oh, okay, all right then.
Stephen Cohen up in New York, the owner of the Mets, got a bit of feel of like a Prokhorov feel from the Nets back
very
the
much
day,
so.
Where you get as this billionaire that's new to the game and just flat out wants to buy his way to glory, which in baseball, baseball of all the major professional sports is the one where buying your way to glory is actually makes the most sense. The guys are much more plug and play in that sport than anywhere else.
Are you nervous about the Rangers at all with them putting this super infield together with these two guys? I mean, I still think the Rangers are going to win 79 games next year.
Are they 1 year ahead of schedule? Does this put them 1 year ahead of schedule from where you thought they were going to be?
Well, I mean,
what was the over under on them going into this year?
I don't know. Oh, well, wins?
Yeah.
Somewhere in the high 60s or low 70s, I would say, if I had to guess.
I'm keeping an eye on them. They're a burgeoning storm in the Atlantic, Sean. Yeah. This is like when you see those, when you look at the radar and you see those storms coming over from Africa midway through the Atlantic. And you're like, is it going to become a hurricane or is it just going to drift off northward die like one of Dexter's victims?
Right. You look at it like, and you're like, oh, Harvey, that's the name of a nerd. That nothing's going to happen. Nothing's going to happen.
Dumbest name
with that.
Ever.
Yeah.
Harvey snuck in.
Oh, boy, did he ever. And he stayed a while.
Told us he was going to San Antonio. It's stupid.
Liar.
Bastard. Remember?
Liar.
I remember sitting in this studio and being like, oh boy, I feel bad for the people in San Antonio. I'm just going to take a leisurely drive home. I'm sure I'll be back tomorrow. Yeah.
Nope. All right. So next chance to win Texans tickets, 7:45, between 7:45 and 8 o'clock, right after we talk to Ross Tucker at the bottom of the 7 o'clock hour. David Culley is taking up for this guy harder than he's taken up for any Texans player that we've heard. That's next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.